folks seem to know everyone, like today's guest, Coco Chanel, whose grandmother was besties with gospel legend Mahalia Jackson. And in high school, Coco was gal pals with Nelson Ellis, the late actor best known for playing Lafayette Reynolds in the HBO series True Blood.
Today, Coco Chanel joins us to talk about her life as a Chicago drag queen, her roots in musical theater, to physically building the stage at the Call Bar, and celebrating the life of her close friend Nelson Ellis.
Listen as we kiki with Coco about her magic fingers, the amazing Godfather rap Rudy Ray Moore, and Lady Reed, the Madam Queen Bee, and her outrageous advice album, The Sensuous Black Woman.
Plus, what's the problem with Jay-Z and Beyonce's new album?
And what can we do to stop Republican concentration camps for immigrant children? I'm Fausto Fernos.
I'm Brian Sweeney.
And this is Feast of Fun. Ooh. Hey, Brian, will you moan like a porn star?
Uh-huh.
No, like a woman.
Fuck me, Fausto. Sensuous black woman.
Are you aroused now, listeners?
Hey! I'm gonna come. That's what it sounds like when I come.
All those kidney stones in your nuts.
Oh, my cum's gotta work its way through my balls. through my dick hole.
Mark, wherever you are, save me.
And onto your face. You fucking piece of shit, you. Oh, unbelievable.
Hey, stop it. This is a family-friendly show.
Oh, feast of family.
Yes. Are you all ready?
Oh, yeah.
I was born ready.
I was born this way.
Our guest today is the large and in charge, thick and rich and delicious, brown and beautiful, Coco Chanel.
Hi!
One of my lovely drag queens that performs here in at The Call. It's a bar right in our neighborhood in Andersonville.
Yes, indeed. I built that stage.
You did? Physically I built it with a hammer?
Physically built the stage. Me and my best friend, we built the stage there. They did not have a stage before me.
So if you ever want to perform there, they have to say yes to you.
Yes.
You got skills.
I do. I have skills in many areas.
In high school, you used to tutor the actor best known as Lafayette Reynolds in True Blood, who passed away last year.
I did.
Nelson Ellis.
Yes. That was kind of a hard blow for a lot of us. We were the TR Falcons, Thornridge, as we went Thornridge High School.
Oh.
And
where is that high school?
That's in Dalton, Illinois. Okay. So southeast.
Okay.
And we had a big party for him a couple months ago. A lot of people from our high school.
A memorial party.
Yeah, just kind of celebrate his life because he would have been 40 this year.
Oh, what a heartbreaking moment.
Yeah, it was really hard because I felt like a lot of ways we were competing with each other. Like I started, he's the one that kind of taught me how to act. Mm. He's the one that taught me like techniques and tactics and learning about emotional recall and how to be a performer. And he was just amazing. He was one of the few people that I've met in my lifetime that can say, like, you can watch him, he can make you laugh, and in 30 seconds, he'll make you cry.
Because I'm what? A fierce queen.
Fierce,
what is it?
Fierce.
What is the famous line that he would deliver in True Blood to the haters? We don't serve. I got AIDS in that burger.
Oh, yeah. That was a powerful scene. A powerful scene.
That scene still gets shared on all of our social media.
Mm-hmm.
You know? I'm so just blown away by your close relationship with Nelson Ellis. I forgot to introduce Brian Sweeney's here.
Hello.
The new Mark Felia.
I'm good friends with Anna Paquin. She taught me how to act.
Yeah, it's with your penis.
I guess. I don't know what that means. I was on the set of X-Men, and I whipped it out, and that's when the hair streak, or gray streak, happened in her hair.
Oh.
That didn't happen.
She saw that and was like, oh, no, baby. We're good friends, but no.
But no.
She became a fairy in the, and that was her
true blood.
They were like,
She's a fairy.
She wasn't a fairy.
Everybody was something in True Blood.
They were all something.
And that's why it had to end.
Except for Lafayette, he was actually just a regular person, but then he got, like, turned at the end.
Well, he was a sassy black man.
Oh, well, that too, you know.
And so...
Who was not gay in real life, by the way.
In real life, Nelson Ellis was not gay.
Was not gay.
Oh, wow. But you
much
are.
Like Will
oh,
on
yes.
Will and Grace.
I love the penis.
You would...
Slap across the face and call me Sally. I love it.
So your close relationship with Nelson, like, did you come out to him? I'm assuming you did, right?
I never did.
You never did.
But he knew, right?
I mean, he knew. Once he's like, saw me do, like, Dragon Kid shows and stuff, it was like, And I was like, I didn't have to say anything. It was one of those, like, plus it was the 90s, too. So it was like, you didn't really, like, necessarily
say that.
Let
me tell you something. I performed in drag for my father before I came out as gay to him too. And you know, and it was easier to come out as a drag queen back in the early 90s than it was to be gay.
Well, because you performed in drag and you had a heart attack and died while you were doing it, so you didn't have to come out.
Because I was so good.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
Just stunning.
Knocked him in.
Because I'm what? Sickening. Because I do not need a sugar daddy. I could have a sugar daddy, but I am not that kind of girl.
This is what you said to your father. This is your dad's eulogy.
Oh, damn.
All your aunts are like,
oh, this is going to be a long service.
It's like, here we go.
You come in full drag. It's a bunch of, just you come out of a shell, like Botticelli.
You know, I'm surprised my dad had mistresses, and none of them showed up to his funeral.
Well, he was Latino. Well, isn't that like a thing in the Latino community?
There was a woman sitting in the back row with the sunglasses and a trench coat.
But, well, Exhibit A.
Yeah. So what was Nelson Ellis's memorial like?
It was actually at a South Suburban funeral home in Harvey, and it was a lot of stars there. Like Viola Davis was there.
Harvey is where I grew up. I grew up next door to Harvey.
Oh, so
I should have stopped by with Anna Paquin.
There you go.
And, there you go, friend Anna.
And the guy from It, isn't the guy from It on True Blood? Pennywise the Clown.
No.
Or no, his brother.
That was his brother.
He's got some
Alexander Skarsgård.
Beautiful family.
Great drag queen too.
Well, the Skarsgårds. Yeah, we'll dressed as Pennywise. we'll all show up next time. I don't know. Next time we're in Harvey.
But Viola Davis was there.
She spoke a little bit, and like a lot of the family. It was a big to do, and it was odd,
because
I never had to experience someone that was like close to my age passing away. I've had a lot of people that pass away.
He's
1 year older than me, but like there are a lot of people that pass away, but they were always older. There was like my grandparents and, you know, my aunties. I'm used to that part. It was harder for someone that like I looked to as like an inspiration. It was like, oh, he's made it. Like I had this thing, like I wrote this musical called How I Almost Made It, the musical. So it was like how I always been connected to these people, and it's like I've almost made it. And then like seeing someone that has made it and like was beloved by everybody, and to not even be able to reach out to anyone about his own personal demons, that's what hurt me more.
What denomination was it, religious wise, or was it the funeral?
It was mostly,
wake or a funeral?
It was a funeral. It was a funeral.
Did they put it in the ground, the casket and stuff?
I couldn't do that part.
Mm-hmm.
I'll admit, I couldn't do that part.
Because I'm Irish Catholic, so like everything for me is wakes. So I'm like, wakes are fun and there's food and stuff.
It's not fun, but
around and you like tell stories and like everyone's around.
It was more of like somber. It was like, you know, just that people speak about his life and what
he
did.
There was no food?
Afterward. That's repass. So there's usually, that's the prepass and repass. So prepass is like where you can do the visitation. There's usually like the light things to have, but repast is after the whole funeral service, and that's where you have the food and people talk. And
you know, in my mind, I'm thinking that his funeral memorial service was like New Orleans with a jazz band, but he's not Cajun, or I mean that was so associated with that character.
He was, even though he was
people mentally like have a hard time separating the two.
Yeah, I mean, like his story. I personally, I think his story should be a movie.
Sure.
Because of the things that he went through with his sister, that she was abused, and then she passed away, and having the things that he had to go through, and like getting accepted to the Juilliard was like, it was great. Like, that was another thing. Like, he got accepted to Juilliard. I made the waiting list. Awesome. So it was like one of the moments I'm like, I'm almost made it. But yeah, and just like in his experiences of like just meeting Alan Ball, like that was one of those like magical moments for mm-hmm. him, and just mm-hmm. that changed everything. Like, you know, so
he was in Get On Up with Black Panther.
He sure
Holy
was.
Holy shit!
He yeah. sure was.
So like, listen, he did a movie with Black Panther. He was on True Blood.
Yes.
He was in The Butler.
Yeah.
He played Martin now, Luther King Jr. in mm-hmm. The Butler.
Now,
he wrote a wonderful play, too.
Yeah.
And all of
a
this,
beautiful play.
All of this is obviously is sad when we lose people
yeah.
that we love. But that is a hell of a life that dude packed in.
Like, yes.
Yeah, there were demons and all that shit, and I'm not saying that it's... But
mm-hmm.
most... Like, this is insane. Like, that is a crazy life. And he's 40 or something like that when he died?
He would have been 40 this year.
Yeah.
Most people, like, what... Like, live to 90. They don't make movies with Black Panther and shit like
I know,
that.
I haven't.
That, like,
I'm still waiting for my
True
call.
Blood
I want to be the
Juilliard,
one white like, person... The other white person in the Black Panther movie in Wakanda.
Yeah.
And be like, can I touch? And they're like, no.
Like, that's... Like, it is like...
Like, the, if he needs a fluffer, I'm here for you.
That,
whatever you
the
need.
The measure of that, though... The measure of his life of like how much is like crazy like how mm-hmm. much he packed in to 40 years and yes
True.
Like it's sad they got caught off but like maybe it was because like he packed all that in whereas like most people would have to spread out so much
so
yeah
Coco
mm-hmm.
you obviously have you know deep roots in gospel and entertainment
yes.
and acting
mm-hmm.
I imagine that your family, and you've been doing drag and dressing up in drag for generations, for decades now. When you first came into drag, RuPaul's Drag Race wasn't on television.
No.
What was the reaction of your family to sort of seeing you go in this very unconventional direction?
It was a challenge. It was challenging because my family was okay with me being gay. That wasn't the issue. The issue sure. was they didn't know how to deal with someone that could possibly be trans. That's what they always associate being with a drag queen. A drag mm-hmm. queen is going to be trans. That's just like, it's a gateway drug, like marijuana. That's what they saw it as. And
you want to cut off your penis.
Right, exactly.
And they're superficial mind.
Oh, so eventually right. there's going yeah. to be a sex change. Like, this is just like a
that's
stop
what they, that's
on
what
the,
they thought. They, that was yeah. just a, you know, a stop on to uh-huh.
You
being
have a
trans.
Beautiful penis. It's a big, beautiful penis.
Yeah, know. Your mouth's like, I used to wash that and you're just going to cut it off. I spent nine
Mom,
months
just
making that.
Putting on a dress.
Like, I promise
all.
You, it's not going away.
I spent 9 months making those balls. They better stay.
Exactly. yeah, but I mean, it was just like, that was a harder thing. And then when I finally performed at the Baton for the first time with Chili Pepper and Sherry Payne, that was the first time they actually saw me live in drag. And I just broke down crying because it was like something I had never, I didn't think it was ever going to happen. I always invited them to shows, and I was like, I built the stage at The Call. I did this thing, and like, my show, Horrors of Horror, became like, you know, one of the top 13 shows to see for Halloween, like 2015. Come see the show, like, it's gonna be amazing. And they never would come until I was at the Baton, and that was like, when I was mom was like, okay, I feel like I'm doing something right, because they actually came.
Even when it's not like that, it's hard to get people to see your shows, regardless of.
Hey, it's true.
It's hard getting
folks tonight.
It's hard getting family to come.
I'm at the Call in drag with mm-hmm. Kevi Vida and the House of Travesties mm-hmm. show, and I'm sure it'll be 10 people in the audience. There.
Show Nell and I will be there.
Yes, right. I'll be there.
We'll be repping Harvey.
Don't jump on that stage too hard, though.
I don't believe in talking.
You grew up in Harvey?
I grew up in. So Richard grew up in 95th and Jeffrey.
Oh.
So I grew up in the Manor, Jeffrey Manor. Near the hundreds, that's
near
right.
The hundreds.
And then we moved to Dalton because my grandfather was a big like oil tycoon in Southern California. And then
like
he
there
passed
will be
away.
Blood? Was that how he is?
I don't say those things.
There will be, you don't say there will be blood?
I won't say that.
Oh,
I don't
okay.
know. I plead the fifth. No,
okay.
joking. No, he would just he just owned like a bunch of gas stations downstairs and down in mm-hmm. South Carolina, and he did pretty well there. So then when he passed away, he left my dad some money, and then we were able to move like to the suburbs and like give me a good education, and that was the The beginning of the end.
And now you're a drag queen.
And now I'm a drag queen. What was all this money.
Do you remember the first song you lip-synced to?
Yes. My very first song. So I Teddy did drag just in theater and plays and children's shows. So sure. I didn't do actual lip-sync until like maybe 10 years ago.
So and you were playing female characters.
Yes.
Were you a theater kid in high school or stuff?
Yes. Okay. I did speech team and that's why I would compete with Nelson Ellis. He did the speech team as well. And if you look up the original IHSA competition, you can see his old headshot. It's under a different name. It spelled his name differently, so you had to do a little digging, but it's out there. But I did dramatic interpretation, and I did dramatic duet acting, and then I did radio, but that was terrible. I was horrible at radio. But yeah, so that's kind of how that started.
What was your first?
But my first song.
I'm sorry. Yes. Did you use your real name for radio, or did you have like a hello? This is Stormy August.
I did have a pseudonym. It was something like T-Con something. It was that, and I'd use that for like when I go in the undercover. It's like T-Con. So now I just said it to the world. So yeah, uh-oh. Great. So if you see T-Con, it's like that's Coco.
Your first song must have been very important for you.
It was,
and for a lot of drag queens, they think very deeply about this.
Yes.
And it defines them as people. That's why I want to know that.
It does. So my very first song was Love It Is Really My Game by Brainstorm.
I have no idea what that is.
So if you look it up, it was a big like dance 70s disco number. And in the show Noah's Ark, it was a song that they decided to get in drag and do. And it was one of the songs I always got up and danced to, like when I would go to like when I shouldn't have been there, but the manhole.
that was a gay bar in Halls in Boys Town.
How many manholes are there? Like how much? Like seriously? Like
it was actually a seedy bar before it became.
I'm saying is like if you have a gay bar, like it feels like manhole would be like the number one thing. Like and it's just like can't we come up with something else?
It was funny.
It was.
But no, I'm saying that there has to be 4 million manhole.
You know, the
bars.
Thing about it is, going to the manhole back in the day was you were lucky if someone paid attention to you. Right?
It was
very hard to get people. Like, it was where all the snobby whores hung out.
That's true.
In a place called the manhole?
The manhole. Yes.
You could be snobby?
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's interesting, like, you know, with all these hookup apps today, it's very easy to people find kind of sex with somebody that is attracted to them relatively so. And you forget how painful the rejection was at a place like the manhole and what a triumph it was when you actually hooked up and took someone home.
It was a feeling of conquest, like, oh my God, like, I did this thing. Okay, so I'm going to tell the story. So there was this one time I was 20, and I was going to the manhole, and I met this boy, and he was beautiful. I called him Charmin because his butt was just like tissue paper. I was like, oh, this
like
is...
Like soft, you mean?
Absolutely.
Or because you tore it apart so...
Well, that was later.
You let little pieces on your butt.
Yeah. You kept having to pick pieces out.
That's the Aldi brand. And I took him home, and I was like, oh, this is like, it was like fun. I was like, I'm 20 years old. I shouldn't be in the bar, but I am. And, you know, like, just taking a boy home, it was exciting. It was invigorating. Like, oh, my God, like, this guy likes me. I'm going to take him home. And,
you had to, like, take him home to the suburbs?
Yes.
So how long was that commute?
That was about like a 40-minute
drive. Sex was so hard to do.
That's why Jeffrey Dahmer was able to get so many guys.
But the thing was, I never did it in the house.
Oh, okay.
So I would get
car.
To, I would
together,
get to the garage.
Like,
and I would do things with them in the garage because that way I could do whatever and I could just hose it off and send them on a swing.
So your sex life was better in the summer than it was in the winter.
Absolutely.
It's like, wait, summer's here. Time to suck some dicks.
Get it crunked.
So would you have like a space heater? Just a bunch of space heaters every time if it was too cold?
I didn't do it in the winter because that was my birthday, too. That's my birthday's in the winter time, so I wouldn't do anything because I was being nice around my birthday. I just wanted to get drunk.
So do you feel like your sexuality is seasonal? Because I definitely do think that for a lot of people, they're more sexually active in the warm, like spring and summer.
Yeah, I was usually luckier in the summertime than the winter.
Winter time. Like market days, like when it comes here in Chicago,
I think that might be,
it's the last hurrah.
I think that's a gay thing.
Yeah, cause straight because people have babies in the winter Christmas time. And
Well, straight people get it's scientifically proven that like people, or at least straight people, start having sex more when the winter, because there's nothing to do anymore, so like you're
bored,
just trapped
in. Yeah.
But I was always in rehearsal too, so it was like wintertime was like the beginning of a lot of the theater season stuff, so like August was like, okay, we're getting popping, we got this musical, and I literally have done 5 musicals straight back to back to back to back to back, and I'm just talking about like I'm just singing, and no, you're singing, we're dancing, we're acting, like sure. I was doing it all, so didn't have time for boys. I was like, I gotta focus on this.
So wait, what you weren't having sex with these with the musical guys either?
No,
because
they were
the
were trashy. Trashy.
Oh, really? The manhole is snobby.
Honey.
Upscale
manhole.
But you were also 20.
I don't shit where I eat, honey.
You know what it is? It's a lot of the actors gossip about each other. When it's a small community, it can interfere with you getting roles. And if you're depending financially on the money you're making from these roles, you're not going to. It's like having sex with your coworkers.
Yeah, but right. Everyone fucks. Okay.
But then also when you fuck with somebody and then like, okay, you break up with them, next thing you know, they're going to be the director of the next show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So now I was like, oh, I can't be a part of the show because we ended bad.
And it just what was the shows that you did? Like,
Wizard I did of Oz, Cabaret. Kind of Cabaret. I did Cabaret twice. Yeah. I did Jekyll and Hyde. That was fun. I did Chicago.
Were you Dr. Jekyll?
No, I was actually his butler. So
Mary Shelley?
No,
Mary Riley.
Yeah, he had a male butler, and the butler is actually throughout the entire piece. So he actually watches the demise of Jekyll and Hyde.
Is the book from his perspective?
No, the book is actually from the perspective of his best friend Utterson.
Did you ever do The Wiz?
I always wanted to do The Wiz.
When I think of home, I think of a place where there's love overflowing. I would like to see The Wiz cast with someone like you.
I would love that.
You know, a strong black gay man. Mm-hmm. You know, Titus. Well, because, you know, what is the name who plays Titus Andronicus?
Is Titus Burgess.
Titus Burgess is well known for doing Dream Girls.
Yes.
As a male role,
His step down from Patty is amazing.
Yeah,
like I have a good voice, but I would love to have that richness of like in my higher notes. I'm working on it.
I would like to see you as Valjean.
Jean Valjean.
No. Javert.
Oh, Javert, yes.
I'd like to see you jump off a bridge.
Yes! At the end. Oh, my God. I would live for that, honey.
And be like, at last we meet again.
Jump off a bridge into a death drop.
I had an idea. I had an idea of Les Miserables, and then I saw that this had already been done, but Eponine as a man, and that's why she is so in love with Marius, but can't give it. But then I thought of an all-drag Les Miserables solely because the tag can be every man will be a queen. Thank you. But unfortunately, none of us could ever
day. Get
the rights to that. Would be a
everything would be in a key of D.
Yes,
I think anybody can do. Like you just rent the rights, just same way you rent a VHS.
Not for Les Miserables.
No.
Wait, what?
No.
You thought like for $3, Chanel and I could just put on Les Miserables?
Why not? Or just call it something
not?
Else? Just call it Miserable
Why
Bitches.
Why not? What is it? A brand that could get watered down somehow?
If Jackie B can, you know, write new words to something and perform it, you know, they can do the Golden Girls in drag.
Yes, but that is, but it's still like, if they wanted to, they could sue
parody.
Her,
yes.
Her into oblivion.
Parody is legal.
Well,
but if they use the same music, they have to get licensing permission.
And I'm talking about like real, just like full on like drag, but it's played like straight. No pun intended, but played like with the lay, except for, I guess.
I had a dream.
Except
that
for
life
the.
Could be. But see, would you want them all singing falsetto? Or do you want them to sing in their butch voices?
Whatever works. And then, but I guess like Master of the House and stuff, like it'd be fun if like maybe they're. That's the only like straight couple. Like that's the only like normal. But they're played more conservative, like. Because, and they're just robbing people blind.
So theater people, listen up. This is a good idea. There you go.
Most of them are gone, so they won't miss much.
Fundraiser idea. Then you don't have to pay for licensing.
Do a Kickstarter for that.
Come on.
Kickstarter. There you go. Kickstarter.
You know. So you've been sort of preparing yourself for, you know, sort of the reality TV show circuit and stuff. Mm-hmm. And you are always developing impressions of entertainers.
Yes. Yes. So I've been working on my Oprah. I love Oprah. I love her. But from the stories I've heard about her, she's a bitch. And she's crazy. Because I would love to actually like show a different side of her, like where she's like screaming at Gail and like throwing cars at people and like
like picking up cars and throwing them.
Yes, like she Hulk style. No,
seriously,
my favorite things are.
And like Gail has to get in like the Hulkbuster outfit from Avengers: Age of Ultron.
It'd be just amazing
and destroy an entire city. This is a good idea. Somebody give us hundreds of millions of dollars to make the Hulk Iron Man, but have it be Gail and Oprah fighting and destroying a city.
I think that'd be hilarious.
Because Gail would have to like fly up into the atmosphere until Oprah passes out from lack of oxygen. And then Oprah Ragnarok. I'm sure that there's a... Yeah, that'd be fun. That'd be great.
I would be instead of the Hulk, it's Hulk's doing a talk show.
Yeah, come on, Kevin Feige, call us. We have ideas.
Pick up the phone. We need money. Pick up the phone.
I know after Infinity War, you're hurting and wishing that you could figure out how to make this work.
Before we started taping, we got into a long conversation about Rudy Ray Moore. And I can't remember why we brought it up.
Way down in the jungle deep.
Oh, because of your name, Chanel.
That's my name, Chanel, yes.
Chanel is based off of the villain in The Last Dragon. Barry Gordy's The Last Dragon.
Right, the spelling of it was the idea.
But on the rhythm of the night, you can dance until the light. Yeah, forget about the worries on your mind. You can leave it all behind. La, la, la.
Oh, that's more druggy.
The most DeBarge of all movies. It is like just the DeBargiest thing that you've ever seen.
But if
that
is short circuit. Haven't seen Barry Gordon's The Last Dragon. It's a really campy, strange film.
Oh, it's so odd. But I love it. It's such like a cult classic. I love cult movies.
And like I don't even think it's campy. Like it seems like they were trying to actually make. Like what they would watch in the afternoons, like just the chop socky movies, except they were trying to make it in like 80s New York with black people.
Yeah.
It's just Kung Fu with Lisa Lisa and Cult Jam.
You know, Rudy Ray Moore was definitely a fan of the, you know, karate action film.
Yes.
And certainly, like, a lot of his work, you know, if you guys don't know who Rudy Ray Moore, he's considered by many black comedians as an inspiration to them. Richard Pryor, Eddie Murphy. Mm-hmm. He's called the godfather of rap.
Yeah.
And he was a big star of the Chitlin circuit and performed alongside comedians like Red Fox and Lady Reed, who, if you guys are fans of Outrageous Women, you've heard The Sensuous Black Woman on YouTube. If you haven't Googled The Sensuous Black Woman, drink a beer or a glass of wine and sit down and listen to half an hour.
And really soak it in, honey, because it's good stuff.
Are you getting to the news about Rudy Ray Moore?
What's going on with Rudy Ray Moore? He passed away.
Yeah, he's back. he came back to life. Yeah.
What?
No.
What?
Yes. Apparently.
Yeah, is he Christ? Has he risen again?
Apparently, Rudy Ray Moore is Jesus. No.
Ready ain't got nothing on that.
Wesley Snipes and Eddie Murphy are making a Netflix movie.
On Rudy Ray Moore?
Yeah.
I think that sounds fantastic.
That's good.
I
that's good news.
I don't come here to brag. I don't come here to boast. I came to see who can boast the most toast.
Titus is going to be in it.
Really?
Titus Burgess or Burgess?
Titus Burgess, yeah. Burgess,
sounds good
Mike
to me.
Epps, Craig Robbins.
So, yeah.
You know, some of those people are still alive.
Mm-hmm.
You know? I'm not sure. The Chitlin circuit.
Yes.
And a lot of people don't understand that the Borscht Belt and the Chitlin circuit was such a big contributor to everything we love about American popular culture today. from every modern musical style, from stand-up comedy to everything we think about entertainment, we owe to these sort of very niche communities. And Rudy Ray Moore, he was like, he stood up on stage and be like, I love a woman with a big ass.
I like baby pussy hair. Can you dig it?
This is
it's really late and I'm yelling.
this is one thing that I wrote in honor of Rudy Ray Moore that's pretty close to, because a lot of the stuff that we have is kind of like comedy albums and it doesn't have a structure, so I kind of rewrote one.
And there's like naked ladies all on the cover all the time.
You have an ass so nice I could eat it once or twice. As a banana split, it would be a sure delight. I could eat your ass for breakfast, for morning, and in the middle of the night. And if I had to eat your ass all by itself, it would still be all right. Can you dig it? And the audience politely applauds.
It was like the Dr. Seuss of filth.
And that's like, his new tagline.
And you're like, when's the punchline coming?
Shut your ass up. And they just like beat up a person. I will kill you.
He came up with films Petey Wheatstraw, The Devil's Son-in-Law, The Human Tornado. He was very much more than blaxploitation, because Rudy Ray Moore was an auteur. He was somebody who found the funding, wrote, starred, and acted, and fucked many of his co-stars, and you know, bragged about it in the film. Mm-hmm. He would stop the film and be like, this is some good shit. You guys don't appreciate. You didn't think I was going to do that stunt. And he rewinds the film and does the stunt again in front of the movie. And
I bet you Jive Turkey is going to do that shit.
And I just, to me, like, as a drag queen, Rudy Ray Moore influenced so much of my early work as an entertainer, as a performer. Just because of the fact that, like, if he could do it, he did it because he loved karate. He loved to fuck. He loved music. He loved to drink. He loved women. And he just loved all these things. Mm-hmm. And his whole career as an entertainer was just based on all the things he loved.
He was probably trying, like, his ultimate goal was probably to fuck Pam Grier. And so he probably, and he was like, I will keep making movies until I fuck Coffee Brown.
No, he was
Foxy Brown.
He had gorgeous women co-starring with him.
But Pam Grier is Pam Grier.
Yeah. She's the diamond prize.
It's like almost like the objectively, like, she's just like one of the most beautiful creatures of that moment in time.
Coco, I guess the right question is, like,
would you fuck Rudy?
Rudy Ray Moore.
For the right amount.
No, I mean, because you're certainly familiar with Rudy Ray Moore, you know, and as an actor, as a performer, like, how do you feel like he's inspired you?
I think
not at all.
as my boy self, he's inspired me to be more of entrepreneur-esque, because me and my best friend, Toma, we actually developed a theater company together. Mm. And we were doing a lot of shows. A lot of people now have gone off to be equity and working on Broadway and all this stuff. We helped develop that. So I think in that way, I'd like to think I'm following his vision of, like, I love performing. I love the art of creating characters and telling stories and getting people to connect to pieces. So I love doing that. And then as Coco, I love to embody that in a way that I can as my boy self. Mm. So that's why kind of Coco was born, because...
But you're a very sweet, demure kind of queen. You're not like... I'm thinking of Vaginal Kareem Davis, who literally would give shrimp jobs to her audience. You know who Vaginal Kareem Davis is?
I don't. That's new on me.
So RuPaul, everybody knows who RuPaul is, got his start as a backup singer for this drag queen named Vaginal Kareem Davis in New York City.
Okay.
And she, Vaginal Kareem Davis, was a punk. She was she had a rock and roll musical act.
Oh, okay. Yes,
and she would pull sexy young, she like, I need to find some sexy, I'm sorry, she would use the voice like this. I need to find some sexy, sounds a lot like Lady Bunny. Bunny,
yeah.
Some sexy white young boys.
Was she black?
No. Yes. Vaginal Kareem Davis was formidable you know, 8 feet tall.
Formidably black. She was formidably
black. Is that a presence?
Man, if you...
she was 8 feet tall.
Coco Chanel should do a one-woman show called Formidably Black. That you know is what? A great thing. That's like the undeniable blackness Jack Johnson story.
There it she
is.
She was there the Paul Bunyan... Of drag queens.
I don't, because she was tall?
She would step.
And she had a blue eye.
She stepped down in the mud, lifted her heel, and the Lake Erie filled into that area.
That wasn't Paul Bunyan. That was his ox blue.
So yeah. Vaginal Kareem Davis was, and if, you know, unfortunately, we've begged and begged to get her on the show. Mm-hmm. She's kind of like. She's checked out of this world, you know.
I'm done.
She's done with the world. She is having currently lives in Berlin and has sex with many men.
There you go.
The all club the time. Berlin. Living the dream. She just lives there?
No, the city in Germany.
Country. Oh, okay.
She's just like, living I'm the dream, America. You know, and every now and then she shows up unexpectedly to art openings or RuPaul's things in LA, but she is definitely a very elusive. She's like, you know, Bigfoot.
Well, I didn't actually know her name, but I knew the stories about her. Bunyan. There you go.
Well, I knew about
So anyways, she was very sexually aggressive, but you strike me as a very demure, very subtle, very sublime kind of entertainer.
I do the opposite sometimes. Mm-hmm. So I'll present myself as, very demure and nice, and I was like, yeah, I'm going to put my fist in you. Because everyone knows that in my family, that we all know that I have fisting jokes. I love fisting jokes. I just love
it. Let me see that hand. Hold on to your hand.
Do you love it as a...
That hand is big.
Now is...
I am 6'3" out of heels.
But is it fisting as a joke, or like it's like I'm telling you the truth in a joking fashion? Like, are you super into
filled
fisting?
Filled with love.
I fill with love. I like to fill people with
you
love.
You like to fill people...
And my fingers.
That's breathing. and fingers and fists and thumbs.
You like Jim Henson, but, you know, fleshier.
You like to Kermit these boys.
I like to be like the Audrey 2 and just say, feed me Seymour. I mean, you know.
Damn roses.
Always back to musical theater.
Damn thorns.
Definitely, like, that's one role I would always love to play or is,
Audrey 2.
Yeah, Levi, kind of blanking out his name.
Yeah.
From the Four Tops.
Yes. Levi. I can't remember his last name right
now.
Oh, my
God.
Levi.
Because it was a long day. But
the audience is like, how can you not remember?
How can you forget? I know.
He's a mean green mother Levi from outer Stubbs. Space, and he's...
Levi Stubbs.
Thank you. Thank you, Brain. Came at the last minute.
No, I think he actually, I'm not sure if he
away,
won an Oscar or was nominated.
He was nominated.
Mean Green Mother from Outer Space.
Mm-hmm. He was nominated, but I don't think it won.
I know, I do remember him singing that either at the Tonys or...
It was probably at the Academy Awards.
Probably at the Oscars, yeah.
Tisha
yeah.
Campbell's best role.
Who's Tisha? Where is she?
From
my
Martin?
God.
Damn, Gina.
She was in that?
She was a baby in that.
Yeah, they were the ones that walked around talking about Skid Row and
the Greek Chorus.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
Holy
they had great
shit.
Dresses in that.
Didn't she originate that role in the Broadway production?
No. It was other girls. But
speaking of Tisha Campbell, that's how I learned about Rudy Ray Moore from House Party.
Yes.
When kid wanted to go out for a party and his dad said, I was going to rent Dolomite. What, you don't like Dolomite no more? You grew up on them.
Mm-hmm. And Tisha Campbell, bless her heart. She's working there really hard again. But have you heard her sing lately?
I haven't heard her sing oldly
well,
or lately.
Look up the YouTube of Tisha Campbell singing at karaoke for one of her old songs. And... it's kind of sad.
Tisha Campbell and I are just 2 years apart. So how the fuck did she star in... Because I was a kid when I saw that movie.
Mm-hmm.
She lies about her age.
It was only like 86 or 87.
86, 87.
She was probably
like
18.
She must have been 16 or 17 when she did that role.
Her and Tashina Arnold.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because I was like,
whoever the Michelle
and
Williams
and the third person, yes, Michelle. Although I love my Michelle,
was the Beyonce of the Greek Chorus in Little Shop of Horrors.
She went like from there to House Party, like in she was.
Mm-hmm.
Do you guys really want to talk about Beyonce and Jay-Z's new album?
No. Okay, you know, I'm going to say this one
audience.
Thing. I'm going to say this one thing about that.
Everything
I saw the video.
Love. Everything is love.
I know they're trying to be avant-garde, trying to be different, trying to be unique. I don't understand it. I like stories. I like themes. I love what Michael Jackson used to do and tell a story with the video.
He's a panther.
Yeah. Like, and well, you know,
criminal. Not everything. Criminal,
or like, you know, when like he did the Egyptian thing for Remember the Time, like, oh, this is cool. I saw that and I was like, what?
Do you think that Michael Jackson was making a reference to the Black Panthers civil rights movement when he transformed into one?
There is no way.
In Smooth Criminal.
He didn't know. That was in Black and White. In Smooth Criminal, that was with Joe Pesci, where he just
did the lean. Joystick headband thing.
That's the, and the Sega Genesis
that
Moonraker.
That game was amazing.
Moonraker is great.
Moonwalker was amazing.
Moonwalker. I'm sorry.
Not Raker Walker. No, well, that's a porn.
That's James Bond.
Moonraker is a porn.
Oh,
I was. You know,
don't ask me about that.
I'm so embarrassed to admit, when I was a kid and Thriller premiered on HBO, I think it was HBO, not MTV. It was the world premiere music video.
It was world premiere music video, yeah.
It was one of the first
ones. You
could
buy a VHS of it, too. I remember that.
And I was terrified. I had nightmares about it.
A lot of people did. And that's that was my beginning of love for horror things. I love horror stuff.
She was 18 in Little Shop of Horrors, Tisha Campbell. And she was on an episode of Captain Kangaroo as a kid.
Yeah.
So I don't think she can lie.
She was also in an early Broadway musical that did really poorly, but it was about like inner city kids. And it's a really good concept and story. It's just like the songs were terrible.
But she
probably got hurt. Like they found her from there because she was like 14, 15 when she was doing that.
And
show.
When she did in School Days was a musical.
Yeah, so. She was great in School Days. Oh, that movie though. All the feelings.
Doing the butt. Ow. Sexy. Want burr, that butt. Burr. That butt. Just give me that
sure
butt.
Sure, they got a big old butt. Oh, yeah.
So, for folks who need to know what's going on with Beyonce, Jay-Z,
yes,
in a nutshell, what's going on with
they're
that?
They're very rich. They're rich and they don't give a fuck that they're rich. They will tell you that they're rich. They're very powerful.
I think that's healthy, isn't it?
No.
Is it, though?
Fuck. No. It's right now. No.
When unapologetically we're at, like, rich.
It's repulsive. When you have, like, 2% of union workers, hardly anyone can afford insurance and stuff. Like, it's just, I'm done with it. Like, it's not even about, it's just, it's a specifically me and Jay-Z thing. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, but not just like this is a emotional thing of who we are, and maybe that is just who they are, but it's like we buy fine art, we buy very expensive paintings, and then we go to different countries and we perform for millions and fuck you and I'm a bad bitch and that's it. And like that is it. And Jay-Z like has been talking about this because
and everything is love.
Oh, fuck that. Everything is not... I mean, it's just so stupid. Like, everything not fucking love, and it's just all goddamn boring, and they just have nothing to say, and it's...
It's not relatable.
But it's also, like...
Sure.
They're banging on, like... She's going to be, like, 40, she's going to be 50. But also, like, Beyonce still is like, I can't believe I'm here. Like, that's one of the fucking lyrics. And it's like, you've been in Destiny's Child since you were, like, 11.
Yeah.
You have been famous since you were, like, 14. You have only dated Jay-Z. Like, you started dating Jay-Z when you were literally, like, 19. So, like, what
can't you... She has no point of reference.
Yeah, and it's like, what can't you believe? That your father, your awful, awful father made it, like, that you would be famous above anyone else ever and just destroyed the lives of so many people? Well, fuck them. Like, fuck you, rich. Fuck the rich.
But I will say, I do commend them on the fact that they are showing that, you know, they're in a relationship, but they had the troubles, but they're still together. I think it's important to see that because we, as black folk, don't always see that in or represent it in television, especially in entertainment. Mm-hmm. So I think it's important to actually see that. My thing is, I wish some of these artists would take the road that Stevie Wonder would do. Because Stevie Wonder is one of my idols. Like, he's a brilliant songwriter.
He wanted to uplift people.
He wanted to uplift people and wanted to show, like, we can be better than what we are. Let's not forget where we were, but let's not forget how what we can be and what we want to go and be in life. And that's what I loved about Stevie. And his music reflect that, no matter how, you know, going to the 70s and 80s. And his music is just itself. It's just gorgeous. And I'm so upset that there's no musical, there's no movie about Stevie Wonder's life.
Well, because he's still alive. you know.
Ray so was made, Ray, yeah. There's a
Ray
lot
Charles
of,
was still alive when they made Ray.
We're still alive.
He needs to put out his memoirs. You know, but like Tina, What's Love Got to Do with It was made because Tina Turner put out a book and licensed it.
But also, yeah, like, well, first of all, biopics about music are almost always disappointing because they
Ray Charles was pretty good.
It was fine, but they're always, I always feel like they're never as good as if you had just made a documentary about this and like had the people talking because it's like, because you have to make it into a narrative for movies. And so you have to make it 90 or 2 hours. And you know exactly what's going to happen, but that's not the problem because we know bad guys are going to be beaten by good guys, and that's like what our stories are. But you like sort of know like the end. It's all like the same shit. Like people didn't believe him, then people did believe in him, but then the strains of fame became too much for their marriage, and they got into drugs. Then they had a comeback, and now here they are. And it's like, and that's fine, but I feel like it is so much better to hear from the actual people. And this goes back to the Jay-Z Beyonce argument, where it's like, I would love it if what they actually discussed was like in Lemonade and 444, it was discussed, but I would like it if it was much more of like real. And that's a big problem with a lot of art, and it's like pop music in general,
music,
is that with Stevie Wonder and like Marvin Gaye, you believe, and like Frank Sinatra, who didn't write these songs, but when he sings them, you believe he went through the shit, which is insane.
Yeah.
Because who's leaving Frank Sinatra? But if he's singing a song about this woman that broke his heart and now he's nothing, you're like, oh shit, Frank's been through some shit.
I mean, the same with Judy Garland was the same way because, you know, the thing about she was not classically trained to sing. So but she knew how to emote in the songs. That's why when you listen to those songs now, they still resonate because you can connect to what she's singing about.
But it's also
so
like,
you
why
think, in 10 years or 30 years, we're going to be able to relate to Jay-Z and Beyonce's music? Or is it really just a phenomena of the hype?
I think we'll be able to look at it as a timepiece. I don't know if we can relate to
But it's just like Jay-Z.
I want to relate to the money, but that's not the story.
It's like, what do you think is keeping Jay-Z and Beyonce from addressing, say, income inequality?
They don't give a shit. They're in Beyonce and Jay-Z world. Why the fuck would?
Because I think personally, I think they don't want to ruffle too many feathers because they like the income that they're getting. They like the fame that they're getting. And that's what I notice with a lot of people because I also have my regular day job and I deal with a lot of people that are very well off, and they don't like to ruffle feathers because
do you think that Jay-Z and Beyonce wake up and wonder when the good times are going to end?
I think so. I think that's a constant thing that they think about. You know how, like, so you know, Biggie used to say, "My money, my problems."
Sure.
You know, I think that's the same mentality of like, when is it going to end for us? When is our gravy train going to end? So,
I mean, you know, like Chris Rock really explained it beautifully in his stand-up comedy. It's like, you know, he wants to be as rich as the guy who signs Beyonce and Jay-Z's checks. You know what I'm saying? Like, there's rich and there's wealth. Wealth gets passed on to generations. Wealth changes communities.
Agree.
Rich is burning a $100 bill, you know, and lighting a cigar with it.
But it's also like the problem with when we are like, Wonder Woman made a bunch of money. Black Panther made a bunch of money. We're winning. And it's like, no. You know who's winning? Shareholders of Warner Brothers and Disney. You know who they are? Old rich white people.
Yep.
All of this, the fact that Black Panther made so much money and they're like, now they're going to put more black people in movies. And it's like, this isn't going to go where
the way you
think
it's,
it's like, this is just the structure and they've just figured out a new way to exploit the working class as they always do. And it's just like, this is just what it is. And the fact that like Jay-Z and Beyonce, with Jay-Z, the only albums that I feel anyone would still listen to in the Jay-Z catalog would be the Black Album and Blueprint. And that is because it is the only time Jay-Z has sort of shown vulnerability and explained who he is, as opposed to just doing the cool Jay-Z thing, which was more of, wow, that was good, as opposed to like, holy shit, like that made me think. And 444 is kind of too little too late at this point. And it's just because like, he's older and like rap. I remember there was a really good interview with Ad Rock from the Beastie Boys on Sway with Sway, and they were like, "Do you listen to any new rap?" And he's like, "No, I'm 50. Like, why would anyone give a shit what I have to say? Like, as a Beastie Boy, he knows, like, it doesn't matter anymore. Like, youth is so important, especially in rap. Like, if you're 28, people are like, old man, I'm the new blood because, like, I'm 21. And that's just, like, the way, it's the same with punk rock. It's the same, all that stuff belongs to the youth. And so, like, when Jay-Z comes out with albums, who is really listening to these things? It's the same thing with Kanye. It's like these are the mainstream media makes it into a big deal, so we have to talk about it, but it's not what people are really playing in the streets or in the clubs. Like, no one is playing any of the new Kanye, the new Jay-Z, any of that shit. And that's just how things are. Like, it's just the quicker we are to accept things like that, I feel the better we are with being able to create art for our own sake, and for instead of trying to like trace trends.
But I want to be really careful and, you know, step back a little bit because we're all artists here, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And it bothers me to no end how critical people are about someone like RuPaul, who's like, why aren't there this kind of person or that kind of person on your show? And I'm like, it's his show, and he worked really hard to make that happen. And, you know, I think the better question is why, you know, if you'd like to see other types of representation in entertainment and television, what's holding you back from pursuing that?
Absolutely. And that's the thing that I've always been very adamant about of like when I had my theater company and we were doing things that we wanted to do because no one was doing it. No one was doing it for color girls in Chicago except for in colleges.
Really?
Yes.
Wow.
Until we started doing it. And there was this
I'm shocked because that's like when you talk about black theater, that's one of the top five plays of all time.
Yeah, but no one was doing it in Chicago. Yeah. And you have, and I'm going to just say it, you have Black Ensemble Theater, who is a very prominent black theater here that does not do very established black work.
Yeah, and I guess that's in our neighborhood.
That's in our neighborhood in Chicago.
But what's going on with that? Like, because they look like they're well funded.
They're doing very well with the original pieces they're doing, but I just want them to do some established pieces so that people can have a variety of both.
Do you have connections?
New work and also established work so that people can see more August Wilson's work. They can see more things that have, like, you know, Susie Laurie Parks, rather, that they have written and done. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, there's such good work out there. There's Top Dog Underdog, which was like won a Pulitzer. It's a brilliant piece about black men in America. Why is no one doing it? That's what bothers
me. But do you have connections more so to this because you don't, because like the Jay-Z Beyonce thing, like because of their status, there are a group of people that like work for them that don't allow things to come in because like that's their job, because you can't get it. And I'm not saying like therefore that's it. And it feels like that's a thing that you sort of always have to, it's your duty as you like get bigger to remember that, to talk to say to the people that stop like the young and hungry people from coming to talk to you because of so many people just being like, let me talk to Jay-Z. But there is like, there has to be some of this balance because while Fausto, you do make this argument about RuPaul, like, well, then why don't you do it or whatever? It is not. I disagree because I feel like the more power you have as a human being in our society,
if you have a
duty,
the
more you have to look at other people and do things and stick your neck out and use the power and privilege that you have to help people behind you. And I'm not... Okay. I understand the like, RuPaul, like, he can do whatever the hell he wants.
Sometimes it feels like that it's never enough. You know? And part of the times is, like, I've been in this situation. People see me as successful. People see me as not doing my due duty. And I'm just like, I could give you my last pint of blood in my body and my shirt,
and it's still
be dead,
be
and it's still not enough. And I'm just like, you know, and I... If anything I can do is I want to empower people to take action in their own hands, because ultimately that's the true empowerment. Yeah. That's the true liberation.
Well, what
it's not me giving you something. It's me helping you do it on your own.
But it's like on the same aspect, though, I think there are different levels to things.
Sure.
And I think people can do things like, okay, if you're not seeing that represented on VH1, okay, well, then why don't you talk to your local, like, TV station and try to create something with your local TV station? Why don't you try something? Think outside the box. But, a lot of people don't want to think outside the box. That's what pisses me off about some Chicago people. Sorry.
It's also very hard to to think outside the box, because a lot of times we can only see structures that are already made, and then say, well, that's what a house looks like. So then
But
to come in and then say, like, well, why can't we make a house in a different way?
Right. Why can't we make it an oval?
Tough for us. It's hard as
you're
human
a great
beings.
Musician.
Thank you.
You're a good playwright. And other people will look at what you do and say, how the hell do you take nothing and turn it into something? And I would argue that process is exactly the same for anything.
Absolutely. You know,
how do you start with nothing and create a television show? How do you start from? And part of it is like, I think we watch too much television, and we chase, as a person who makes television, I think we watch way too much television, and
we put too much value on television.
And I'll be the first one who says, I am sick and tired of the RuPaul's Drag Race paradigm, and that needs to change. And not because it's not a fun show, it's not a great show, it's done some amazing things, is that we need more voices, we need more experiences, we need more ideas.
It's also old. Like, it's been around for almost a fucking decade. And it's like...
Well, so have we, but...
Okay, but what's next? Like, who is coming? And it's like, if RuPaul has really... And RuPaul's Drag Race has really opened up so many doors and shit like that, then where the fuck are they? Like, and like...
Well, there's,
and
you know...
That's a big aside from Cooking with Drag Queens.
Cooking with Drag Queens.
The most important
television show ever.
Yes.
But, you know, T-shirts I would say there's a lot of things in the I can't talk about, but there are things being developed that are... That
you
are,
almost said in the pipeline.
In the pipeline.
Sexy.
In the pipe.
That's hot.
I like it in the pipe.
I'm laying down pipe.
There's a lot of stuff in the pipeline in my
garage.
I'm
working on it. Okay, I can't do any... I'm just one man, but I'm working
on
it. And you're one man.
Exactly.
Gender nonconforming person.
Sure. whatever the kids are saying these days. Look, I'm old. Cocoa. I'm like, look, I'm a queen.
You're not that old. Queen. You're younger than I am. And how is that possible?
As you get older, the definition of young and old is so, like, people die at the age of like 50 and like, he was so young. And it's like, no, he's half of 100.
I have a coworker.
When did that become young?
I think he's young. And he's a thick and juicy black man, gay black man. And I think he's a young man. And he's like always talking about how old he is and stuff. And I'm just like, bitch, you're not a day over 25. And
that's it's like, devil.
And he's like, and he's actually closer to my own age. And so we started talking about how we dye our beards and dye our hair.
Okay.
So we pass. You know, because if people visually expect something of you, and this is what we can learn from drag queens. Yeah. If you dress like a diva and you act like somebody who's deserving of attention, you will become someone who's deserving of attention.
That's true.
And they're not, drag queens are not assholes. Brian, right?
Some are.
No, that's not. That isn't the standard setting for drag queens, is just pretend that you...
Fake it till you make it.
And just be
fake
it till you make asshole.
It. Yeah. I say it all the time.
Who said that again? Was a
Adolf Hitler, which is weird.
That was how
he became head of Germany.
I mean, he did give us our subways, so there's that.
The interstate, the interstate system was... Here's what Hitler did right podcast now.
that's a conversation, isn't it?
The Volkswagen.
Hitler went to jail. Just like, I didn't know about this. So people are like talking about Trump going to jail. And I'm like, yeah. And I guess Hitler was in jail for like some time before he then again rose to power.
Well, that was where he wrote.
Is that when he wrote Mein Kampf?
Mein Kampf. Yeah. And because God came to him. In this, I believe it was a military prison, and told him that he had to get rid of like the bougie Russian Jews. Whatever.
And right now in the United States, like, you open it up and you see these children in concentration camps. This is us. This is This is who we are.
And what is...
Yeah.
What is to be done? And this is what...
And then Trump's saying that he cannot do anything about it because the Democrats...
It's a Democrat. Well, they've said...
That's a blame game, though. He's always doing the blame game.
Well, he said it's the Democrats, and then he said it was terrible.
Then he brags
Jeff
about
Sessions
it.
Said it was because it's in the Bible, and you can... that governments are supposed to be... revered, which isn't true, but whatever. And then it was also said by the Trump, this is all this weekend, by the Trump administration, that they were criminals that broke the law, so they had to do that. And then it was said it's actually not happening. those are all things in a weekend. That was what the White House said. But again, like, it's like RuPaul or whatever, when or the giving the blood, what else do you want from me type of thing.
There's, sure.
There's a parable in the first season of Fargo that a rabbi gives of a man who reads in the newspaper of all this suffering and stuff. So he says, I'm going to give up. He's a rich man, and so he gives up all of his money. Mm-hmm. And then he sees that they're still suffering, so he decides to, like, give up a kidney. And then and donate that, and then he sees that they're still suffering, so he says to the doctor that he wants to give his eyes and all of his organs that he can, and he does, and then he sees that they're still suffering, so he kills himself in a bathtub to leave his body to stop the suffering. And
it's kind of like the Giving Tree by Shel Silverstein.
Oh, yeah.
And the Simpsons, they said that they were writing on the chalkboard, the Giving Tree was a chump.
Yeah, but like you have to, if you don't, and Captain Kirk says in the darkness, I don't know what I'm supposed to do. All I know is what I can do. And that, I think, is important. So we can, because when we say things like, well, what else? Like, how much am I supposed to do? It's letting us off the hook, I feel. And we say these things so that we don't have to do even the bare minimum that we can do of, like, just calling our representatives. Mm-hmm. And so I feel like do as much as you can. But what I always think of is, if I was in the situation, what would I want to see that people were doing to help? Like, mm-hmm. if I came out and said, my boyfriend has been raping me all these years, would I want to see on Twitter people supporting me, or at least saying, like, oh, like,
are you
I'm
talking
sorry.
About Chris Hardwick and his ex-girlfriend?
I'm talking about all of them, but yeah. Sure, right now it's Chris Hardwick.
I don't know
but
about
like,
that.
I know, baby.
I'm sorry, what? No.
Chris Hardwick, the original host of MTV's dating game.
Singled Out.
Yeah. Singled Out.
And at midnight.
And Nerdist, I guess his ex-girlfriend has come out and said that he's, you know, sexually assaulting her, and he just did all a bunch of awful things
abusive,
to her,
abusive
ex-person, you know.
But then now
it's like, oh, he's like, oh, am I? Let's see the, because she's like, oh, I have recordings, I have proof and evidence and all this mm-hmm. stuff. He's like, let's see it. I'd love to see it. Where is it? You know. So part of it is this two people who are you know, exes, and they might be taking advantage of people's good faith.
That's hard, especially when you're in the life
but,
like that.
But Chris Hardwick has lost his gig with hosting the after show of
Walking Dead.
The Walking Dead.
And, but he had his own... Yeah. But also, like, those types of... But that's not the... Like, the real thing is she was blacklisted for 4 years or something mm-hmm. afterward. And so regardless of, and like that again, like I know that this is trite because everyone says it, but I hate bullies more than like anything.
Sure.
And, mm-hmm. and I know, like, of course everyone hates bullies, but it affects me. So like when there's a scene in a movie of a kid getting bullied, like it's hard for me to take.
That's your trigger
in Bad Santa. You've seen Bad Santa.
Yeah,
there's that scene where he just beats the shit out of those bully kids
yeah.
is one of the most beautiful things. I love it. It is cathartic. I'm sorry, Dr. King. It's wonderful. But anyway,
fair.
That to me, I feel, is worse than anything, because like physical abuse and even psychological abuse, like that can end, and you can work on that. But you need some form of a support system. And if an entire industry mm-hmm. is told to keep you down and you will be, and it is done to you for years,
yeah.
that is never ending agony. That's because human beings, we can endure anything if we know that there's an end to it.
Mm-hmm.
If we can withstand prison, whatever, as long as we know we're getting out. If you are put in a room, like if you're in Guantanamo or whatever, like, and you're just told you never can go, like, it's done. Like, we can't handle that. And so, like, that's why I feel like it's much more important to worry about Chris Hardwick or whatever and more about, like, the culture that allows things like blacklisting. And even, like, people just, that's just so horrible in every single possible way.
Well, we're in an interesting time right now because it's good because we're having a lot of these people coming out and saying like, that was me too, the Me Too movement. And it's great that we're having this happen. But I also want to be clear that we need to make sure that this is actually happening with some of these people. Because there are people that are against that doing the whole thing of like, well, he fucked me over. So, cause I have literally sat in the dressing room. I've heard people say, I'm going to fuck him over. So I'm going to fuck him over. I'm going to go on Twitter. I'm going to discredit his name. I'm like, we need that to talk
the
about.
The Chicago drag queen scene in Boys Town?
Maybe. No, joking. No. They're coming after you now. They can't only
want to. I was going to say, it's like, you know, when I saw that trend happening, I was just like, it's just a matter of time before they come after me. And sure enough, they did. And it was like, and to me, I'm just like, I turn to this very important community to me personally,
mm-hmm.
and it's a community that is suffering, obviously.
Yeah.
It is a community that is at war with itself.
Which it shouldn't have to be.
And never questions or targets bar owners, ever. You know, like the... And they could, right? They could say,
they could
like,
easily.
We need to form a union. We need to have health care.
And that's what I've been talking about for a while,
that's
too.
The whole fucking thing. Like, people, like Roseanne say, like, it's if you are work, like, if you're working on Roseanne and you're one of the main cast members who's already a millionaire, mm-hmm. this isn't that big of a fucking deal for you.
No.
So, like, most of us have to work for people that are racist, terrible assholes. Like, we have to just be okay with it because we can't afford medicine. Like, we have to be there.
Sure.
But people like Sarah Gilbert, like, fuck you. Because you knew everything that she talked about, from her transphobic tweets to her Islamophobic tweets. Sarah Gilbert's pretending like she had no idea any of this was going on. If she had gone after white lesbians, fucking Sarah Gilbert would have been immediately against Roseanne. So fuck you.
Yeah, Sarah Gilbert. You know, her sister's Melissa Gilbert.
Oh, Jesus.
That was the episode of Little House on the Prairie we never got to see.
There you go.
Where Darlene comes in with a sardonic comment and walks away. And Michael Ann's like, that wasn't nice. And John Boy's like, ooh, what a jerk. She's married to Linda Perry.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
I got to say this about the, you know, immigration question or
I'm
concern.
Against immigration, as you know, Fausto.
If what is keeping
a
us,
mess.
Besides the fact that we belong here, we deserve to be in our country,
mm-hmm.
this country is us,
mm-hmm.
what's really keeping us, most people, you have intelligence, skills, money to pick up and move to another country that is not so fucked up. What's really keeping us here is the diversity that immigrants bring to this United States. Why it doesn't suck to live in the United States is because you can go out and listen to any kind of music, mm-hmm. eat any kind of food, and interact with people from... If you live in an urban environment...
Yeah, right. This is a very Chicago-centric view of America,
but it is. It's what makes Chicago not suck.
Yes,
you know?
But if you go an hour north or south... You're not
exactly.
here anymore. You are.
Yeah.
You will see white people in working gas stations, and it's weird. Yeah. Like when you go into like a Subway, and white people are serving the food or something. You're like, what is happening? Like, I remember I went into a Subway.
Isn't that my dream? I think that's my dream.
I guess
white people
like,
serving me. It's great.
I went into yes, of course that's a dream. But like, I went into a Subway, and like it was all white people with like hemp necklaces or whatever, and they were listening to Dave Matthews Band. I'm like, what the fuck is going on? Because if GCI isn't playing in the food establishment, then I don't know what I'm doing.
But I would say that it definitely it's the diversity of immigration that makes the United States the country that we love. And without that, you're basically, you know, you go to Japan, mm-hmm. it's mostly Japanese people. Mexico, yeah. it's mostly Mexican people. Yeah. You go to Southern Illinois, it's mostly white Southern Illinoisans.
And the Klan and neo-Nazis and gun runners.
Yeah.
Well, they're mostly in
and
Indiana.
And it sucks, you know.
No, they're in Kentucky, Southern Illinois border.
And what makes it so exciting and beautiful Indiana. And wonderful mm-hmm. is the immigration. And so if you have immigrants moving into your town, into your community, it's a gift. In the long term, in the short term, it's a diversity is the what makes life worth living. And it's you know, it's like having one cable channel. You know, no TV show, no cable channel is that good. When you have 100 cable channels, when you have the whole internet and all of YouTube and Netflix to watch whatever the fuck you want to watch, that's good. That's good. And imagine if you turned somebody and said, you know, you're only going to be able to watch Good Witch reruns from the Hallmark Channel.
Good Witch reruns.
And I'd be like, I'm okay with that. And,
yeah.
But.
And all I have to do is give up immigrant. Good Witch reruns.
Now, if you
would
have said the Golden Girls.
What if that's what Trump ran on? Enough. He's like, vote for me and it's nothing but Good Witch reruns.
That's a campaign he can run on. Yeah. I mean, he's done worse.
I'm concerned about.
He hasn't. Apparently, he won. You understand that?
Oh, I know.
But I
Trump
feel
acts like he didn't win, though.
No, I know. But that's. But the right wing is all about persecution and complex.
It's almost time for re-election time too.
It's also almost time to get sent to jail.
But
it's coming down, honey.
It will never happen. But. The thing about this, like, you're making, like, it's nice and whatever to pretend like anyone's gonna listen and be like, that is true, like, diversity is great. That's not how we win. Like, we don't win hearts and minds. Like, this is a fucking war. Like, we are in a war.
It's important
and it's
to remind yourself
fine.
Of the value
we already
of that.
Know that.
Yeah.
But
no.
The big problem with, like, people
sometimes
like Schumer, the problem with Schumer and Pelosi is that they are peacetime politicians. And we are in a fucking war right now because we have the most powerful political party in the entire world cannot come forward and say they are against taking away children from their parents and putting them in cages. That is where we are. So we can't sit here and act like, you know, Mr. Rogers put his feet in a pool. That's great. But it's not how we win. The only way to win is by organizing and destroying the Republican Party the most. It is in beyond, like, it's beyond words how bad they are. And just everything about them. When Republican policies, anytime that they are shown to the public is horrified. The fact that Democrats can't figure out how to make this scene is the problem. But this is a Republican policy. This is what they ran on. This is what they wanted. Trump said it. Trump said that he was going to have immigration crackdown forces going door to door and picking up immigrants and putting them in jail. This is what they wanted. They do not care. And the only thing we can do is get people to fucking vote. Do not waste time getting arguments with these people because they are arguing already in bad faith. They're not coming at you from a place of respect on a basis level of truth or anything. They are racist, awful people that do not deserve your time. And that's how it is.
But also to clear up, too, like, vote for more than just the president. Because I think what people...
Oh, God, yes.
But that's the thing. That people say, oh, yeah, I voted. Okay, well, do you know who, like, your local legislatures are? They're like, no, I don't know who that is. I'm like... You need to know what's locally.
For alderman.
You need to,
or the alderman. Yeah, exactly. You need to know who's actually representing you in your district.
And you know one simple solution? Have a garage sale and apply for the permit with your alderman so you get to meet and talk to your alderman at the very least.
At the very least, yes.
And call up and scream regardless of how Democratic or liberal or anti-Trump or whatever policy they are, call them up and say, I demand that this happens, which is hard to say, even though these fucking people work for us. Like, we act like we don't know this.
But people don't.
I know that they don't.
That's why we have to remind them.
It's like, listen, like, I don't give a shit about you or your fucking celebrity or your bumper sticker. You work for me, and if I don't like it, you're out of here. I'm sick of it, goddammit.
And that's what we need to start saying to people.
Yeah, like, fuck Duckworth, fuck Durbin. If they're not, they gave up on the Dreamers. what they did to the Dreamers is repulsive, and they gave up on it. And so, no, I am not like this, like, whatever. They are the best, but the fact that the Democrats are the best that we have is repulsive in itself. And you need to call up people like Durbin and Duckworth and say, you are pieces of shit and for what you have done. So you better fucking fix this, or I will do every single thing in my power to make sure that you will lose your elections. Because the Republicans did it because Obama tried to give everyone health care. This is why we're in this.
Like, that's true.
It's whatever. So how's the drag show? What's that about? What's going on? You do a lot of songs about pussy puns or something?
I do.
Cool.
I do.
What's your favorite pun that you have? If you can give it up.
I love that Brian is like,
you better come on, transition.
Damn. I need to breathe a little. Shit.
Good question. I don't know.
What's like one of the times that you like wrote something, not even that might not be in your show anymore, that you were like, God damn, like, I'm good.
You were really putting on the spot.
Where you couldn't wait to like show someone, like, listen, guess what? Like, you woke up your boyfriend or whatever.
So
like,
I wrote this song, and it's actually kind of like an ode to like my exes and stuff. Because I was always the one that was like, I never made time for them. It was always like, I got to do this show. I'm going to audition and whatnot. So it was like, it's kind of like, baby, I'm sorry. And it's like, because I'm always busy. So I was kind of really proud of like taking myself out of it and realizing like, you were probably an asshole to some of your exes because you just didn't make time for them. So that's one thing I'm kind of proud of, like taking myself out of it and realizing how I was in the past.
So you were vulnerable in the song? Because that's kind of rare for a drag queen, or like a vulnerability. I love that.
Well, I'll tell you the funniest thing that my husband has ever said.
Who's your husband?
Mark Feely.
Who's that?
I forgot who he was. What even looks like. Well, he'll be back someday, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right? I can hear him knocking on the door right now.
Hello?
Mark!
Oh, it's me. I'm in the gym.
So, before we get to that joke, yes. Coco Chanel this fall is putting together a haunted house.
Yes. I'm working with a theater company called Red Tape Theater, and we're utilizing their space to make this big haunted house drag spectacular.
It's going to be terrifying.
It's going to be very terrifying.
So, in other words, it's going to have a lot of mirrors and photos of you in there.
Naturally.
That's Mark's
joke. Oh, there it is.
That's Mark's joke. It's like, I went to this haunted house, and it was the scariest thing that I've ever seen. It's like, must have been full of mirrors.
All of mirrors.
when can we see this, and where can we go?
Going to be October 27th, which is a Saturday, and then on Halloween night at midnight.
Oh, only twice. That's a lot of work for a haunted house. Usually they do a week at least.
Usually do a week, but because it's going to be like in the middle of like a lot of shows and stuff,
sure.
I really want it to be like a wham bam thank you ma'am kind of moment of like, come in, if you miss it, you missed it.
We got a press pass for one of the world's largest haunted houses that takes place in the suburbs of Chicago. And I swear to God, it was like an hour and a half, like, to walk through the fucking...
Like Statesville?
Yeah, it just felt like it was just giant warehouse.
Statesville prison?
With room after room after room after room. And it got more and more ridiculous. And it literally was like somebody like, I forgot, I have to get the taxes done.
That's Paul Lynde. Paul Lynde was there?
I gotta get these taxes.
Oh my God, I forgot to put in the paperwork. I forgot to mail it in.
Your toes are hard.
And then another room is like, that it was a piles of laundry. Mm-hmm. And there's a woman going, dirty laundry, so dirty. And then you get to the next room, and it's a pile of dishes. And I'm like, girl, it's called a haunted house, not an anxiety house.
Where was this?
It was in the suburbs
of
Illinois.
That's not Statesville.
It was fucking scary and it really pushed your buttons. And then the final thing, I guess I can say this, is they had us lie down on the floor, and they just poured those little ping pong balls on top of you. And the process kept going for about good 10 minutes. And I was like, this keeps going. We're not going to be able to breathe or move.
That's scary.
And it was like, and all of a sudden, all the walls gave out and all the ping pong balls, you know, were released.
Well, I'm not doing that. But my thing is more of like, I want to incorporate like drag and burlesque and stuff. And like, so each room is going to have like a performance in there. So I'm going to be your guide to taking you to these different exhibits where performances are happening. And then you're going to go to the big main room where we're going to have a big like finale performance where I rip off my face and all this stuff.
Oh, so, shit. Because you're studying prosthetics too.
Exactly.
Like you rip it like poltergeist, like ripping off your face type
of
shit.
A little bit, yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
Like in clumps then you're going to.
Yep.
Cool. Mm-hmm. That is cool.
What are you going to look like the beautiful part that before you rip
so
it off?
So it's going to be probably like more the Undertaker. So you'll see like the bottom half of my mouth. So you won't see the top and then.
But you're not going to be in a female.
Yes, it's going to be female form, but it's going to be a horror female form.
Oh.
I like to play with, especially when my show, I play with gender all the time. So sometimes it's just no gender at all. It's just like this thing. We don't know what it is.
It's almost like, you know, you identify as cisgendered most of the time,
yeah.
But your art is transgender.
Very much so.
You know, and that's what I always explain to people. It's like not every aspect of our bodies and our lives are the same.
True.
And so when we express ourselves, sometimes we feel more comfortable or excited or, you know, happier when we take on a female voice.
Yeah, because for me, it's always been just like, I love duality. I love playing the duality, dual parts of myself. So, like, during the day, I'm just like, hey, how's it going? Oh, how you doing? And use the deep voice. And then, like, you know, when it's outside, it's like, hey, how you doing? Hey, baby, how you doing? Hey, get your life. Shake it out. You know,
got a good Tyler Perry Madea voice there going.
Mm-hmm.
Who house? That's my Madea.
You actually auditioned for RuPaul's Drag Race.
I did.
As Madea. Hoping they wouldn't notice.
And actually, I had the cops come to my door.
Because you have friends who are police officers.
I have a friend that's a police officer. And so we actually had someone as a cop come to my door.
Was it Alex Cross?
No.
Oh.
I don't want to get him in trouble.
No. Perry was Alex Cross. That was his, like, when he tried to do, like, a straight. I mean, of course, he's straight.
Sure.
The Tyler
Perry.
I know he's straight. The Tyler Perry action movie. He played Alex Cross. That was the name of his big. No one saw it, but it was an action movie. Anyway,
it was so believable.
It was great.
So what was it? Were you dressed as Madea?
I was. So I had the house coat on with the hair and stuff. And
how
then,
you doing? Kind of stuff.
Hello. How you doing?
Yeah.
Good morning.
A good drag joke would be if you point to your butt and say "Meet the Brown."
And on that note,
that's a good drag joke.
Coco Chanel, we are crazy for Coco Chanel. You are delicious.
Oh, yeah.
And you can even drink the milk afterwards.
Always swallow.
People can follow you on social media.
Yes, I am on Twitter, Instagram. So Twitter, I'm just Coco Chanel. Instagram is Coco's Lens. Because this is the world through my eyes. Mm. That was my idea. You know.
Wait, is it the character Coco? Mm-hmm. Or is it
Coco, Chonel?
No. I was wondering if it's like, this is Coco the character. Like, is Coco a character, or is there a lot of you? The person?
It's
Coco?
A lot of it. It's just it's a hyper-developed myself.
Mm-hmm.
Because I as my normal self, I'm kind of shy and quiet a little bit, and
it's like protective layered.
It is. It's a protection from, you know, being hurt.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, it's basically like people go, "What's your real drag name? What's your real name?" And stuff. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, "This is my name."
Yeah,
nobody else.
It's something that I created for myself. And I had a lot of identity issues too when I was younger too.
Oh, you did.
Like, it was more of because my parents are very. Established, not financially, but like socially, like they were like the middle children. They had the good jobs, and I was the golden child. Mm-hmm. So I had
the
a lot
North
of pressure.
Shore Chanels,
mm-hmm. basically, naturally, you know,
the
you
North
know.
Shore Chanels,
quite
from the haves and have nots. If you going on that Tyler Perry route,
so you're basically you're the drag queen, a Fresh Prince of Bel Air,
pretty much. Yes, you know, moving out of Philly. Oh, more like the Carlton of drag, but
you're the Carlton.
But yeah, so it was it was very much like finding myself. I didn't want to be just like my parents, like child.
Sure.
That wasn't my thing.
Finding
I wanted to be
voice.
My own person. And that's when I started to like research drag and like I was coming to my own sexuality of like, who am I? Am I bi? Because a long time I identified as bi because I am not a gold star gay, which is, came from my finger thing. I like fingering stuff.
So
I'm not a gold star gay.
Wait,
but
because you fingered a woman, you're not gold star? Is that what you're saying?
Well, that was my obsession with fingering. I was like, well, I don't want a vagina now. Well, oh, what about this booty hole? Okay, let's finger it. Let's play with it. And
the nice thing about vaginas is that it's basically a hole in the front of the body. You can
and
stick your dick
it's
in.
It's true. I mean, the greatest thing about vaginas.
Oh, here we go.
Let me tell you, folks.
I'm going to drink one.
Let me get you guys. Yeah. Let me tell you guys who are wrong.
Vaginas.
Hey.
A woman.
No, the best thing about vaginas is that they're self-lubricating. Like, you don't have to, like, add anything.
Tell that
you
to a trans to man. It's like, after years of doing testosterone replacement therapy,
okay. I'm sorry.
You hook up with a bro.
Cisgender.
A bonus hole boy. And it's like, that hole is as dry as the Sahara, honey.
All right, I'm sorry. I meant to say cisgendered.
I say this with respect and
all respect because I love my trans brothers and sisters.
I love them more than you do.
Yeah, but like you don't have to spit. You don't have to do anything.
What?
You don't have to spit. You don't have to do anything. But I guess maybe I don't know. I
but
was never
spitting
a dry
means
partner.
Love.
Not all vaginas are self lubricating.
That's true.
Totally.
I know. I said cisgender.
That's why
I mean they are when I come in the room.
Oh right. Yeah.
No, well, at least somebody's coming.
Yeah.
No basement shall go unflooded here.
No,
you're like
whoop.
Moses.
No Southside garage.
You better part that Red Sea.
Hell yeah. My staff. Kaboom.
Brian
with
Sweeney.
With shield and staff, you shall enter.
Hell
people
yeah.
People can follow you on the Brian Sweeney now.
Oh, yes.
Oh, the.
Because
Brian's dong Brian was getting in the way of your mainstream career.
Yes, that's right.
So you changed your Twitter handle.
My Hollywood agent called me up and said, Brian, babe, you got to change this Instagram.
Is that how they talk? Is it from the 1920s?
It is. It's like, hey, we got a nice picture coming up here, and you better do something. Mr. Seltzman wants you to change your name, you see? And I was like, well, how do you like that? All right.
All right, folks. Remember, Feast of Fun is made possible because of financial support of wonderful people like you. Go to feastoffun.com/donate and make a one-time donation, or consider being a member and go to feastoffun.com/plus, where you can listen to all the fabulous podcasts all the way from the Vitriola all the way to the modern age with the iPod and the iPhones and all the fun thingies.
Vitriola.
Vitriola.
I was like, what is Vitriola? I assume that was the name of some drag queen.
Vitriola.
I thought it was like your first episode was in reviewing like Vitrolia.
You know, one of our first podcast episodes was Victoria Lamar. Do you know? Do you remember her?
Mm-hmm.
You do.
I do.
Oh.
I do. I told you I've been around a while.
She used to do shows with you.
Yeah. Mm. I didn't, but I would go watch a show.
You did.
If those fingers could talk.
If
that's the name of your book.
Back
if these fingers,
these fingers
talk.
Had
you know,
talk,
had the
rings on my fingers, it tells you how old I am.
Somebody told me that the Cher musical they're developing here in Chicago.
Yes.
I've been saying the musical is going to start with Cher singing, "If I could turn back time," and you know. Oh, let's go to the very beginning when Cher was with her mother. You know, baby girl, you got to learn how to sing, you know, the kind of thing. Mm-hmm. It's none of that.
No.
Well, of course not.
And I'm like, boo!
There is no, like, that is, no, there is no way that they
would
have
it would be great,
it.
You know, if they did that. But,
I mean,
But not boo to that cast, because Stephanie J. Block's voice is amazing.
It is good. Did you see it?
Not yet.
But you're going to go see it.
I'm going to see it. It's Bob Mackie did the costumes. I'm not going to miss this.
They say that the Bob Mackie costumes is the only reason. Like, it is so much a part of the show that it's basically, it's more a runway show with a musical sort of shoved in there.
So
like, there's thousands of costumes, new costumes designed by Bob Mackie.
I heard. I saw a few. I mean, I didn't see any.
And the craziest thing,
sketches.
Rumor that I heard about this, is that Cher has no involvement in it whatsoever. And in fact, it might not even, like, go to Broadway because she sue them to stop the project.
And I'm that's awkward.
That's going to be weird.
You'd think that would be the first phone call.
Yeah, but here's the killer
thing. Don't
tell
Cher we're doing a musical about her.
They call, that's why they called it the Cher Show. Mm-hmm. So they get by because they probably talk to the owners
of the Cher Show.
Exactly, not Cher herself.
Correct.
So that's how they can get around that.
Ooh, wait a minute.
Licensing, going back to licensing.
Air rights, why didn't I think of that?
Mm-hmm. But why didn't you tell me that, Bob Mackie?
He said, I want a paycheck and a Tony.
Well, you know, I guess Bob Mackie got sick and tired of being a judge on RuPaul's Drag Race.
Well, he ain't been on there for a few seasons.
He was on a season with Alyssa Edwards.
Bob Mackie!
I'm really surprised that you were able
good
to pull
job,
that
up. First of all, to pull that up.
I always have it ready.
I'm very proud of you,
Bob Mackie.
I mean, it's the first time I heard Bob Mackie was Milhouse saying, wow, Bob Mackie. Or, well, Bart says, if you stale that you have this, it's an original. Bob Mackie. And Milhouse goes, wow, a Bob Mackie.
Oh, my God.
Guys, thank you so much for listening. We got to take us away. We're going to be going on a little break and be back soon in a week or two.
Where are you going?
I'm not going anywhere. I'm just here, but we are. Mark will be back.
What?
When we come return.
Who?
Yeah. So
we he can't and say I will have to fight.
I can't
about
say
it.
Anything, but right. The project that Mark was on will be over, and then you guys will we will be able to make an announcement soon.
Yay.
And it will be
soon.
Awkward for us because I've moved in.
Sleeping in his bed, eating his chips.
Yeah,
the dog answers
is that
to your
my
voice.
Robe?
Like, what's happening here? Well, thank you for having me. This
Coco
was
Chanel,
great.
You're so wonderful
thank
and sweet and chocolatey good.
Mm.
Honey, if it's brown, I'm going down.
Mm. That's right. Take it all in.
Mm. Lick it up. Drink the milk.
That's right. Drink the Kool-Aid, too. Get the diabetes. Bye.
Extra sugar. House party reference.